About if it's a very close person to you, your brother, your best friend,
right?
You have information that something is wrong with this girl and he's going out with her. And he didn't ask you. Do you have the obligation to tell him?
That's a very, very difficult problem. That's a very, very difficult problem. Because on the one hand you can say, well, he didn't ask me, I don't have to tell him. But what about if the person would be, I don't know, he would be taking a piece of food, for instance, and I know it's poison. Can I say, well, he didn't ask me, so I let him take poison? You wouldn't say that, right? So don't you have the obligation to tell him in order not to eat poison? Yeah?
I don't really think that's a good analogy.
Why?
Because this guy's going out with this girl. He doesn't know about it. Obviously, they're having a growing relationship because they're still going out. He didn't ask, right? And if this was to come about, immediately we change feelings that were real to there. Change real feelings immediately.
But what about if you come to the conclusion that this person doesn't know about this and this fact, right? And when he's going to find out about it, it's going to hurt him a lot. So therefore, you're avoiding the pain by telling him right now.
But you don't know how he's going to deal with it. You don't.
I mean, what you're saying is correct. What you're saying is correct, basically. The idea is, how certain the situation is, like we said in the case of the Chazon Ish, in the case that I mentioned to you, the Chazon Ish. Had it been a certain situation, once a week she gets an attack of epilepsy, then he would be obligated to say, right? But if it's something that has a built-in doubt, then you have no obligation, and you're absolutely right. That's why the parallel isn't good. This poison, right, it's definitely harmful. There is no doubt about it. Okay? You can't compare that to a situation that has a built-in doubt. For instance, I don't know how the boy is going to react if he knows that the girl has such and such a problem. Maybe for him it's not a problem at all. Maybe the problem doesn't really exist anymore. As long as there are built-in doubts, I don't have the obligation to talk about it. Right? But if it's a case of certainty, then I would have to do it.
Why?
The case of certainty? There is an obligation in the Torah that says, Lo samod, the literal translation is, don't stand al dam reyacho, when your fellow man is bleeding to death. That's the literal translation of the statement in the Torah. Don't stand by while your friend is bleeding to death, by saying, well, it's his problem, not mine. You can't say that. That person is drowning, you have the obligation to save it, right? Drowning doesn't mean only literally drowning. It means any situation that's harmful to him. A person is going into a business that I am convinced it is a terrible business, it's a terrible investment, then I have the obligation to tell him. I can't stand by and say, well, I don't know, maybe not. If I know for sure, yes.
The thing is, you're saying with certainty, let's say that this girl gets an epileptic seizure once a week, okay, and this relationship is going on. Why get involved?
Why get involved doesn't apply in Judaism. Meaning, I'm automatically involved because he's my fellow Jew.
Right, I know that. I know what you're saying. You're automatically involved and that you know about it and you're aware. But I'm saying, like, the relationship between this person, between these two people, is not your relationship.
So what? I mean, I'm obligated to save him from the terrible pain of finding out that
you don't know how his reaction is going to be. Because you don't know that a relationship.
Fine. Okay. In other words, what you are saying, the same idea. When you are saying that if the situation is such that it has a built-in doubt, right? In other words, the key idea is there a built-in doubt to the situation? Like you say, if I know the person and I say, listen, he may know, and just the relationship is such that he doesn't bother him. If I honestly think that, right, then you're right. I wouldn't have to tell him.
But I don't think. how are you supposed to know from the outside the relationship between two other people?
Well, sometimes you do. Of course, it's
outside. Sometimes you do, but I'm saying like...
In a regular situation, so that's what I'm saying. That's why some people see the opinion of the Chazon Ish is based on this idea that you are saying. You don't know what's going on there. I mean, she may be going out with a boy and they have a wonderful relationship. Maybe he knows everything. How do you know? Right? So therefore, don't get involved, not because you have no obligation to get involved, because you don't know all the facts. You don't have a built-in certainty. There is a built-in doubt. When there is a built-in doubt, stay out. Okay? When there is a built-in certainty, stay in. That's the rule of thumb.
What about this kind of situation where a friend or a relative is going out with a girl who you knew before she became a Bali Tshuva, and it wasn't, and she had a seen path? So are you supposed to tell your friend?
Well, of course not. I mean, the past in general doesn't count. As a matter of fact, you are not allowed to mention it. Right, you're not allowed to talk to a person and say, you know, I knew you, even to a person, I say, I knew you before, you know, like a thief. Say, you know, I knew you when you were in jail. Today he's an honest businessman. Not allowed to say it. Right, so for sure you wouldn't be allowed to say that. We're not talking about that. We are talking about a situation that the past is an indication for the future. The past as past is not important, but the past as an indication of the future is important.
So she wasn't a Bali Tshuva, then you would be able to.
Of course, because you have no reason to believe that anything changed. Right? Unless, again, you have a built-in doubt. You say, well, maybe now she's mature and she changed. You understand what I mean? Meaning, there has to be a built-in doubt in order that you should not have the obligation to go and tell him. Now, the situation is different if he asks you. Right? Do you have to lie? So I'm telling you, you don't have to lie. But we are talking about whether you have the obligation to offer the information. Right? So then, the rule of thumb is, offer the information if there is a built-in certainty, and don't offer it if it's a doubt. Okay? Yeah?
So in the case before, you couldn't put the in the paper, why couldn't you put
the announcement in the paper? Impossible. Why? Because there is no certainty.
Okay.
There is no certainty. It's not poison. Right? It's a simple situation. What about... I see, for instance...
You have no obligation against help others.
What?
So you have no obligation to help others because there's a built-in doubt.
Not that I don't have the obligation to build to help others. Because since the situation has a built-in doubt, right, then my statement is not necessarily a helping statement. I may be damaging more than helping.
You said before something like, limit yourself to facts, not opinions. I would think it would be the other way around. Because... if somebody hears an opinion, they say, I disagree with you. But with somebody, you put something a fact, which may be not the fact itself. When I say the fact, they may...
When I mean the facts, I mean real facts. I don't mean assumed facts. I mean real facts that I know, or somebody that I rely on told me. I mean those kind of facts, meaning I heard from someone that this is the fact.
But
that's all I know.
Experience is a fact, I guess. But you know, like I had a bad day myself, I really wasn't...
Of course, that's why you should limit it to facts and not to opinions. Meaning, say the dentist made a mistake, don't say that he's a bad dentist. You don't know if he's a bad dentist from the one mistake.
What about the case before, like similar to what you were talking about, like when you say, he tells you a name, I tell you a name. What happens if I have a friend home and you're never going to meet? If I tell you a fact about somebody or a friend of mine, like, is that like her?
No.
Telling you the lesson or is it telling you his name, lesson or what?
Usually the point is like this: if I have no idea who it is, and so the idea is, what is lashon hara? Lashon hara means creating a negative image about a certain person.
Negative
image.
But you tell the truth. I know.
Image, even if it's a truth, it's still a negative image. Like I told you, he cooks a whole day. It's a negative image. It's nothing. It's a negative image of a person who cooks a whole day, right? Even if it's true, but it's a negative. So the point is, if I'm not talking, if I tell you, you know, I know a person back home who cooks a whole day. I mean, you didn't create a bad image about anybody, right? So of course I'm allowed to say it to you. I mean, it's to you, to the receiver, it's not lashon hara, right? And that's usually the point, that whenever to the receiver it's not lashon hara, to the sayer is also not lashon hara.
But what's the purpose behind this? Of course, in other words, you could think more positive things.
The idea is that The basic idea is ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, which means don't say about others what you wouldn't like someone else to say about you. Right. That is the key to the whole idea. Like, the whole idea is that you should act to the other person constantly thinking, how would I act if I were in his shoes? Right? If I would be the person that people talk about, how would I feel about it? I mean, this the ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, love your fellow man as yourself, is basically the idea. Put yourself in his shoes whenever you make a decision about him.
Yeah, but it seems so tough now that they have the religious Jew and non-religious. You have your hands are tied. You can't say anything, and somebody who doesn't revive a lashon hara.
Well, of course. By the way, the Chofetz Chaim always said. I mean, that's always the problem of being honest, dealing with a dishonest person. I mean, your hands are tied. You're honest. He's not. So don't deal with him. Meaning, you know, choose someone. They say or say in the name of the Chofetz Chaim, I mean, that always choose someone who is more honest than you are. I mean, because if he's less, then you know he has a natural advantage.
What about on a more positive level, where someone should say, someone should come to me and say, "You're the cabinet that you've built for one of your customers, praise your cabinet work," and I would say, "Well, who was it?" Now I'm not thanking them. Who was it? It's not important. It's the fact that someone is pleased with your work. And what made him not? Why would it be wrong for him to say that person's name to me? That's a more positive level.
There is nothing wrong. I mean, there is nothing wrong. I mean, it's just just the opposite. You're saying something good. However, there is a statement in the Talmud, very controversial statement. There is a statement in the Talmud that says like this: don't say good things about someone, right? Don't say shvocho shelodom. Don't say praises about someone. Shemitok shvocho, because through the praise, boli genuso, you will start to criticize him. So very controversial, very ambiguous statement. What does it mean? You're not allowed to praise someone. I can't tell you, you know this man, he's a wonderful person. Why not? So there are many different interpretations. One of them says that, so I think Rashi or some other commentary on this spot says, we're talking about in front of someone who dislikes him. Now, if I talk about A and I know you dislike him, don't praise A in front of you because you dislike him. So, obviously, if you say nice things about him, you're going to come up with a you think he's so nice, he's not so nice. But there are other interpretations that say, no, in general, just don't speak about people. Don't speak about people because naturally you'll speak about people, the chances are you'll point out not such a nice thing. So, therefore, don't praise. Just praise the person himself, but don't talk about the other person. What should you praise A in front of B? What's the purpose of it? The purpose is talking about B, right? That is bad by itself, because talking about B leads to things that you're not allowed to say. Okay? So, if so, this would be a statement saying, don't speak about people. Meaning it's prohibited to speak about people, because speaking about people eventually will lead to lashon hara. Yeah.
When we go back home, all of us are going to be asking us questions about Yeshiva and about Israel and everything. And we can't always say nice things. You know, there's some things we don't like.
You know, now you get into a new subject. The subject is now, what about lashon hara? Not about people, individuals, but groups, things, right? Are you allowed to speak lashon hara about Israel? Huh? On the surface, it's not a person. Right? I mean, it's Israel. Israel is an abstract idea. It's land. I mean, are you allowed to speak lashon hara? The Torah says clearly, you're not allowed to speak lashon hara about Israel. Right? So many people say that it's only Israel, because we find that Israel has a, like, we deal with Israel, the land of Israel, as a human being. Right? Meaning, we have a relationship with the land of Israel. And therefore, we consider it like an individual. Therefore, you're not allowed to say lashon hara, evil things about the land of Israel. The same thing is about groups of people. Are you going to say, well, Polish people, and they are not nice? Right? So many people say that you're not allowed to say it. Why? So here, by the Polish people, it's easier to understand. Because even though I'm talking in an abstract way about Polish people in general, you might know, or you probably know, some people who have Polish roots. And by my saying, Polish people are dumb, or whatever, so you will create a certain idea about a specific pole that you have in mind. So that's already easier to understand. But why the land of Israel, right? The land of Israel, whose image are you going to be changing? So some people say, well, that's about God, meaning that, you know, if I see that somebody gave you a present, and I say, well, that's an ugly thing. Mm-hmm. That's Lashon Hara. Why? About the thing. It's about the person who gave you the thing. That's it. So some people say, well, it's not Lashon Hara about the land of Israel, because God gave it to us as a present. So therefore, by criticizing the land of Israel, you are criticizing the giver of the present.
What about, like, events? Like, I'm shocked and dismayed. I'm reading about Tel Aviv, where certain non-religious Jews are lighting sections of a synagogue on fire. Now someone's going to say, oh, you know, what'd you do in Israel? Is everybody super religious? And I'm going to say, well, you know, not everybody. And then, oh, by the way, in Tel Aviv, you know,
Well, there's another statement. You know. There's another statement that says like this. What about something which is a known fact? It's interesting. The Gemara says, what's considered a known fact? Right? He talks about it here. Like, he limits this idea. It says, if three people know about it, right, then it's a known fact. Three people, it's interesting. If three people know about it, then it's considered a known fact, and there is no Lashon Hara speaking about it. For instance, if you say, for instance, you know what the president did, you know what the prime minister did this and this and this. How do I know? From the newspaper. Meaning, the question is whether a newspaper was allowed to print it. But once the newspaper printed it, it lost the category of Lashon Hara. Everybody knows about it, right? So so that's the rule. Now, the Chofetz Chaim, the author of this book, Guard Your Tongue, limits this idea very much. He says, for instance, let's say it's something...
The goal read in the New York Times that Mr. Cohen was arrested for infringement of the law.
Oh.
You know, it's obviously well known that Mr. Gold should not relate this information on it.
Should not
relate this information then.
All right. Okay. Why? Well, I mean, it's only part of the quote. That's part of the quote of the Chofetz Chaim.
Lashon Hara is even Lashon Hara that is well known should not be repeated.
Lashon
Hara is coming on. In the paper, New York Times again, like saying, you know.
How can you accept everything's in the paper as a fact? Yeah. I don't understand that at all.
Yeah. That doesn't matter. No. That doesn't matter. Even if it's not a fact.
Incorrect.
You mean because you're afraid maybe it's a lie? Maybe it's a lie. But you can make a judgment. If the New York Times prints it, right?
Ooh,
all right.
Wrong.
But people think that. I'm not saying.
They print.
It's not necessarily the true ones.
Yeah.
If it fits.
Yeah.
So you say, however, there is a lenient opinion which holds that if someone speaks Lashon Hara in the presence of three or more people, right? They are not guilty of Lashon Hara. The original speaker has, of course, sinned. Right? The original speaker has, of course, sinned, but the people who repeat it after that, not. So, really, this is not a verbatim, this is a translation of the Chofetz Chaim? I doubt it, because what the Chofetz Chaim says is, you are not allowed to widen the scope of the group that knows about it. For instance, what does it mean if three people know about it? It means in our society, the New York Times. The New York Times, right, is read by a certain amount of people, by a large amount of people, right? But if I repeat it to someone who is outside of the group of readers of the New York Times, right, then it is Lashon Hara. Or someone in another country, then it is Lashon Hara. So I think that's what he means. It's not clear, because in the beginning he says, no, it's a mistakenly thing that repeating well-known derogatory information is not considered Lashon Hara. That it's a mistake. And then he says, however, there is a lenient opinion, right, which holds that if someone speaks Lashon Hara in the presence of three people, and they subsequently repeat the information, they are not guilty of speaking Lashon Hara. The original speaker is, of course, sin. In other words, he says that there is an argument about it. Mm. There is an argument about it. Okay.
He's kind of takes himself.
It's
not 100% clear what he...
Something like if I would bring in here a plate of bacon, put it down, eat it in front of all you people. Now, would it be Lashon Hara for any one of you? This is more than three people here, so it's obviously a fact that I've done it. But it still would be wrong for either one of you people to go out and tell others.
That is the real Lashon Hara. In other words, we all know the facts, right? But if it's not relevant to anybody else,
right?
But for instance, what about if the head of the school would ask me, should we keep him here, right? Or is there something wrong, you know? They'll say, listen, you know, be careful. Yeah. So, because it's relevant for him. But I'm not allowed to say it over to anyone else.
Right.
Somebody asks you what happened, what are you supposed to do? What are you supposed to do when you hear Lashon Hara? You leave the room, so you don't want to hear it.
Now, Lashon Hara, there is a prohibition. It's a very interesting statement. Very, very difficult statement. Says the Gemara, says the Talmud, Lashon Hara, the one who speaks, the one who says it, has committed a sin, right? And he'll be punished. He's responsible. The one who hears it, you're not allowed to hear Lashon Hara. You are supposed to reject Lashon Hara. Meaning, if somebody tells you Lashon Hara, either walk away or say, you know what, I don't believe it. I just don't believe it. You know, what is meaning? I don't accept it. You have to express your non-acceptance of the Lashon Hara. So he's also responsible, the one who hears it and accepts it. And who else is responsible? The person that Lashon Hara is spoken about. Very difficult statement. Very difficult. And that is asked by the comment. What? It's his fault that Lashon Hara is spoken about him? Why should it be Lashon Hara? Poor guy. I mean, you know. Why?
It was because he shouldn't do anything at all to have people even possibly talk about him.
Right. Meaning, if somebody speaks Lashon Hara about you, right, it's a sign that you should you should change your ways. Right? So that's what the Gemara says. There are three people that are responsible for Lashon Hara. Yeah.
So people talking like that about the opinions about certain things and like that, you know, about
things, ideas, like that, perfect, not people.
By groups, so you can talk about groups and things.
So as I'm telling, groups also not. Groups also not. Because groups affects people's opinion about
like the blacks
in
America, they're all no good.
Not allowed to say
drunks,
that. You're not allowed to say that. But then we're coming to a different subject, which is that the same obligation of Lashon Hara towards a fellow Jew and towards a Gentile, yeah?
But when we go home, our relatives are going to ask us, they're never going to come to us in that. They're going to want to know about our experience. Certainly, some rabbis we really liked and some, we didn't like. You know, the experience is mixed. Every experience is mixed. So how do we go about talking about it? We can't just be silent, you know?
Wait a second. Why would you say that's Lashon Hara to say, well, some rabbis, we didn't like, why is that Lashon Hara? I didn't like a rabbi, that's Lashon Hara.
Maybe they'll think bad about
Rosh
Hashanah, and they'll tell a friend whose son was
in
Rosh
Hashanah. They'll think bad about
Yeshivas
in general.
So
you know
they'll
bad about Judaism. But how do you hold the normal conversation, you know? You just can't.
First of all, this idea that you must be able to talk Lashon Hara. And by the way, you know, many people say that it's not possible to keep the laws of Lashon Hara. Because if you follow the laws of Lashon Hara, right? You just can't keep up a normal conversation.
This might not be a bad thing.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, that's exactly what the Torah is trying to get you. Not to have a normal, decent, conversation between two people, right? And of course, I mean, you are really uprooting 90% of the conversations among people. That's the truth. And this is why it's so difficult.
The telephone
because
in America, really,
right, 100%. I mean, you know, Bell telephone just will go broke. It's really this. I think there is nothing more revolutionary than the prohibition against Lashon Hara. There is nothing that really tells us to change our habits. Even eating kosher food, keeping Shabbos, right, is not as revolutionary for our way of life than the prohibition against Lashon Hara, because it's telling us. All of a sudden, I can't have normal conversations. It's true, I can't have normal conversations. I have to change the subject of a conversation. I have to start talking about ideas, right?
So how is it? Can you give us an example of the way a conversation would go when you talk to me with your office about? I just don't understand how
you do
what
it?
Is in the practice.
Well, the truth of the matter is, it may not be, on the other hand, as limiting, right? As it would sound on the surface. Well, I'm not allowed to say that I don't like some rabbis. Well, not necessarily, because if you come to the conclusion that it's natural, right? I mean, whenever you are in a situation that there are many teachers, right? You like some and you won't like some, meaning it won't create a negative image about a place right? If you don't like some of the rabbis, don't create some a negative image. If you come to that conclusion, but of course you have to decide. Meaning, you have to decide beforehand what am I going to talk about and what I'm not going to talk about. Something which, again, in our way of life, it's impossible. You just talk. What do you mean you think before what you are going to say? You know, according to Judaism, everything you say is a decision, right? Like every one of your actions has to be a decision that you make. Everything you say has to be a decision that you make. However, I personally would say that there is nothing wrong to say, well, listen, you know, some of the rabbis I like, some of the rabbis I didn't like, right? But of course you have to say, you wouldn't be allowed to say, well, it's not a good place because some of the rabbis I don't like, I didn't like. That would be Lashon Hara. That would create a negative image. I don't think, and of course that would be something that somebody can argue against me and say, yes, it does create a negative image. I personally don't think that saying some of the rabbis I didn't like creates a negative image. It's something absolutely natural. Everybody knows that, and you're not creating a negative image. And that should be the main concern of yours. Don't create a negative image, even if it's a true one.
As long as you qualify yourself.
Right, as long as you qualify.
Same thing with like a little Shia, where I say, well, somebody doesn't know how it was. If I
want
to say, oh,
well,
I didn't get much out of it,
that's right.
100%
right.
Some people say, well, no, it's horrible, it's no good. That's Lashon Hara.
That is
Lashon
Hara.
Because from your point of view, how I experienced it.
Well, yeah, right. That you're allowed to say.
It's not Lashon Hara.
Right.
Because you know it's no benefit. You know, like if, say,
you see,
like,
because,
if somebody asked me, I could do that. Okay, well, say I want to find out how he experienced it. I want to, like, I guess my motive is good because I want to see how you experienced the same
right.
I did. Again, it goes back to your motive.
Right. It's the motive.
The intent and the...
Right. You know, the motive is basic, right? And the second idea is, are you damaging somebody? Are you damaging? Are you creating a damaging idea? Right?
Mm-hmm. What happened? Like, how are we benefiting? Like, we have always, like, we have 13, like, it says you have every Lashon Hara, there's like 13, I think we have 13 times mentioned in the Torah, you mention each word is in a fraction, times 13
right,
times,
yeah.
How many people hear it?
Yeah.
How does one, I mean, that's the negative one, but how does one benefit by Lashon Hara, in this for Lashon Hara? You only get a lot to lose. How could you gain?
What do you mean? The overcoming makes you a different person.
You get transgressions for every time you do it, but you can't get any positive messages.
Sure, every time you have a chance to speak Lashon Hara, and you don't, right? Like the Gemara says, every time that you abstain from doing it,
anytime you think about Lashon
Hara, you think about it and you don't say it. You have the opportunity and you keep away from it.
You should think about it all the time.
As long as you don't say it, it's a mitzvah.
Exactly.
The ultimate decision is always subjective, right? Your motives to help somebody, or what I'm saying is what I'm saying is just facts, you know, not embellishment. That's all subjective. That's all your own.
Right. But only if it's relevant to the other person,
and that's also
and for his sake or for the sake of the other person.
That's also in your opinion.
You can only make decisions based on what you think. I mean, right? But of course, you are responsible not to abuse that power that Torah gives you. But that's the power Torah gives you to make decisions. Yeah.
What about the fact of the intentions of really doing good for somebody and being honest, and it just blows you away?
Listen, I mean, you know, that happens all the time. You try to do something good and bad things happen. Right? I mean, that's one of the things that we always ask God, that good things should come out of our good deeds, right? But not always does it work. Not always does it work.
Is that like a neutral kind of...
What?
As far as mitzvahs are concerned, it's a kind of neutral kind of thing. The intention was good that you wanted to help this guy, and it didn't work out that way, so it was like...
Right, I mean, you invited somebody to your house, you wanted to be nice to him. On the way, the man broke his head, the man fell down and broke his arm. Your intention was good.
No,
what's the difference between that and anything else?
I'm talking on an emotional level.
Yeah.
You're trying to, set up a scenario where this person is going to get a lot of positiveness out of it, and you're so straight and honest, and it's takes the opposite effect of that.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't see the difference between that and the case I gave you. Meaning, that something negative came out from something that you honestly wanted to do for a positive reason. What? I mean, that's something that happens all the time.
That point becomes his problem more than yours. I mean, it's his inner character that needs strengthening or needs help with.
Well, right. First of all, you have the obligation to really. It says that if a bad things bad thing happened from your action, you have to reassess the motive of your action. Because according to the things, the way they are supposed to be, good things should happen, should come out of good deeds. So if something bad came out of a good deed, then you have to reassess your motives. Maybe there was something impure about your motives, right? But it happens all the time, yeah.
But then also, then you're dealing with both negatives on both sides, because then this guy's feeling bad from your outward honesty, and you're feeling bad about his sadness as well.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Yes. You both separate. Yeah, but it's right. But you're still responsible to make decisions, and sometimes you get hurt from your own decisions. Yeah.
What about your parents? Is there a special thing?
Well, we didn't speak about Lashon Hara, about Gentiles, about your parents, but we'll leave it. Okay. Gentiles. Now, this says clearly that you know that the rule is the following. Our relationship with our fellow Jews, right, is based on two principles. The recognition of the value of the human being, right? He's the what's called in the Talmudic language, Tzelem Elohim, created in an image of God, right? That's the basis of all our relationships with fellow human beings, is he is a creature of God, therefore he deserves a certain type of obligation. Right. Besides that, to the fellow Jew, right, I have an obligation because of my closeness to him. You hear the two ideas. There's an idea of Tzelem Elohim, being created in the image of God, right? Number two, because I'm close to him, right? For instance, my responsibility towards my brother is based on two things. One, that he's a creature of God like everybody else in the world. Number two, because I'm close to him. So, of course, my responsibility towards my brother is going to be more than my responsibility towards my cousin, right? Because I'm closer to him than to my cousin. So, therefore, if I have a choice whom to help, right, I have an obligation to help the one that's closest to me. So now, all laws that stem from the idea of Tzelem Elohim, a human being, I have to treat him well because he's a human being, apply equally to Jew and Gentile alike. All laws that stem from the idea of closeness apply to Jews and not to Gentile. That is the rule, the general rule. Okay? Therefore, stealing that stem from the recognition that he is a creature of God, he was created with the Tzelem Elohim in the image of God, therefore he has a right to property, yes, I have an obligation to take care of his property and not steal it, whether he's Jew or Gentile, because that doesn't stem from responsibility. That stems from the recognition of his right as a human being. Okay? However, all those laws that stem from my closeness to him doesn't come from my relationship to our fellow human being. Like, for instance, we spoke about taking interest from someone. Taking interest from someone doesn't contradict my recognition of the fact that he's a human being. Right? But that stems from my responsibility to take care of him, so why do you take interest? You follow me? So therefore, interest I'm allowed to take from a Gentile, but I'm not allowed to take from a Jew. Now, Lashon Hara, what's called slandering, right? Since it's not an actual damage, I'm not allowed to go over and damage something that belongs to a fellow human being, because he's a human being, he's a right over his property. But slandering, which is not an actual damage, right? It's not a physical damage. Therefore, it doesn't come from my sense of he's a human being. That comes from the sense of he's close to me. How can I slander him? So therefore, towards a Gentile, we have no responsibility of not slandering. However, We have a third responsibility that we didn't speak about. We spoke about my recognition of my fellow human being, being a creature of God, being created in the image of God, right? Closeness, but then there is another idea. There is an idea of what does a certain act do to my soul? That's a third basis for my actions. For instance, when you see a fly that doesn't even bother you, right? And you kill it just for the fun of it, right? The fly wasn't created in the image of God, right? You have no closeness to the fly, but you are you allowed to kill a fly just for the fun of it? You know that you're not allowed to? You're not allowed to kill a fly just for the fun of it. If it bothers you, kill it. If not, you're not allowed to. Why not? Why not? You know why not? What?
It's a creature of God.
Okay, I mean, but he's a creature of God, so, I mean, creature of God, so, you know, things, I step on a plant. It's a creature of God, too. There is something else there.
You can destroy something, you can't create it, so you can't destroy it.
No, you know what they say? Because it makes you a worse person. It makes you less sensitive, meaning if you are not sensitive to the fly's feelings, whether the fly has feelings or not is irrelevant, but we feel that way, that the fly is something alive and has feelings. If I'm not aware of it, then I become less sensitive to another human being's feelings. So therefore, there is an obligation of tsar balei chaim, meaning be aware of the pain of any thing that exists in the world. Not for the sake of that animal. You see, there is a difference.
It's for the sake of yourself.
It's for the sake of yourself because it corrupts you. So now we have a new basis for actions. Now, Lashon Hara, slander corrupts. Now, if you talk Lashon Hara, you become a worse person. Therefore, you can't talk Lashon Hara about anything because it makes you worse. You understand?
Yeah.
So therefore, concerning whether you're allowed to talk Lashon Hara about a Gentile, no, you are not allowed to. But the reason why in many sources you will see that it says you are not allowed to talk Lashon Hara, you're not allowed to slander a fellow Jew, and it doesn't mention a Gentile, right? Is because the law in itself, which is the prohibition of the Torah to talk Lashon Hara, is specifically about a fellow Jew because it's a law that stems from my responsibility, my closeness, as we are talking about. You understand? There is another thing that I have to take care of my soul. Don't do anything that corrupts your soul. So, of course, if you slander, it will corrupt your soul. Do you follow me? Therefore, it's not a contradiction the fact that in the halakha, right, in the law itself, Jews are mentioned in relation to slander. But in reality, it mentions, but it's not right to talk about anybody.
What about obligation to a parent or a family? Is there any stiffer, or is there any other specific laws like that, or
well, when you're forced, I mean, to parents, of course, it's kabed. We spoke about it the other day.
But Lashon Hara?
But Lashon Hara? Yeah. But Lashon Hara, the way we say it, the way we say that Lashon Hara is based on the idea of closeness, right? Meaning, how can you talk badly to someone that you are close to? So, of course, the closer you are, the more careful you have to be about Lashon Hara. A person thinks that, well, as long as I don't talk against strangers, it's okay. But against my brother, right? I mean, to one brother, talk about the other brother, it's okay. That's what people think. Halachically, it's just the opposite. You're not allowed to. You're not allowed to talk against your parents. You're not allowed to talk against your brothers. Right? You're not allowed to. But it's Lashon Hara, it's slander. I mean, it makes no difference whether it's a stranger or it's somebody close, just the opposite. It's more of a reason not to slander someone you are close with.
Is there such a thing as Lashon Hara against children?
Of course. Of course, Lashon Hara against children.
You're not allowed to say something bad about children?
Yeah, not allowed to, except for a purpose, like we spoke about yesterday. Meaning, if it's for a specific positive purpose, then it's not Lashon Hara anymore, as we said. Yeah.
A lot of conversations, not good or bad, just neutral conversation. Like what that person is doing and that sort of thing.
Okay, neutral conversation theoretically is permitted, right? But the Chafetz Chaim, right, in the book that you had yesterday, says that we always have to be aware of the danger of a neutral conversation. It hardly ever happens that a neutral conversation remains neutral throughout, right? Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, it will turn to a specific criticism or a specific thing which is negative concerning the other person, right? That's why Chafetz Chaim says that you have to be very careful with neutral conversations. Right. But theoretically, neutral conversations are permitted.
What is the story? Are you allowed to listen to Lashon Hara conversation and be silent?
Not at all. Not at all. You're not allowed. You're supposed to reject slander.
If your parents, let's say your parents speak Lashon Hara, right?
Yeah.
And you're sitting in the room. What do you do? How do you react to that? Do you say, oh, listen, I want to know?
That's a very difficult question, of course. I mean, if it wouldn't be your parents, you just have to say no. You know, I just don't accept it, or I would rather not talk about it. You're obligated to express your rejection.
Leave the room?
What? Or leave the room. But what about if it's something like your parents that you're obligated to honor them in a certain way? So then you have to weigh, meaning to reject what they are saying without insulting. You're not allowed to insult
it's
them.
Really difficult.
Extremely difficult.
What happens if they're talking to somebody else, you know, in the conversation? You don't talk while I'm here?
Huh?
What happens if they're talking with each other and you're just listening and you're eating at a table with them?
That's extremely difficult.
We say don't, at least don't talk while I'm here, or...
Yeah, you can, I mean, any act, any word that will express your rejection of the slander, is considered a rejection of the Lashon Hara, which is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to reject Lashon Hara. You have to express that rejection, either by leaving or by saying something.
If but you say something and it just makes the situation worse, then what?
Well, it, of course.
Like you get a comment like, oh, what are you trying to be a saint? Or something like that.
Well, it's of course, that's...
yeah, I mean, it can arouse their ire also. Sure. It can arouse their anger.
Of course, but
don't
want
to listen to me, I'm telling you something.
The Torah obligates you to be a diplomat. All the time. All the time the Torah obligates you to develop your diplomatic skill. In other words, saying something without hurting the person, saying it in a certain way, meaning using methods of how to talk to people. That's part of the obligation. How do you speak to your parents, the Gemara says, right? Your father is telling you to do something that you know is wrong. Right? The Torah is telling me, be a diplomat. Don't tell him you're wrong. You have to make up a story like, what, didn't you say yesterday differently or something? I understood from you, or maybe it's not that way, but you're not allowed to come out openly and say, no, you're wrong. Right? That's what the Torah obligates you to do. In other words, the Torah obligates you to develop your diplomatic skills.
So if you're talking to somebody, you know, you're not allowed to say somebody about something not positive about your parents. What you're saying is that, like, if somebody asks you, my parents, you know, are we supposed to all assume that we're all supposed to portray that we all have ideal parents?
No, that's not
it.
No.
You can't say, well, no, my parents, like...
No. You see...
they got a great home life, you know, like...
I mean, there is no obligation, right? But, I mean, there is no obligation to create a false image. Or, for instance, if somebody says, well, my parents aren't religious, that's Lashon Hara.
Well, you want to explain a reason why you're a certain way.
That's not Lashon Hara.
So you want to explain...
Not today.
What's that?
Why?
What's Lashon Hara?
To say, my parents aren't religious. Is that Lashon Hara? What would you say?
I think it would
be. Is it Lashon Hara? 100% not.
Not today. I don't think so, because they're not pretending to be... religious. In the old days when people...
Exactly. Meaning, if everybody's religious and my parents aren't, so I'm saying something which is negative about my parents, right? To say my parents aren't religious today, does it create any negative image? What did you say? I didn't hear.
It's a positive image.
A positive image, yeah, right?
They're not chained with the shackles of religious slavery.
So, could you say something like that, like you want to explain the reason why you're a certain way, like or could you go to it was a bad trait.
Mm.
Just say it, I got it from my father, or I got it from my parents, or upbringing. Yeah. Is that Lashon Hara?
You know, somebody asked, a psychoanalyst asked, I think, remote, I don't remember whether, being a psychoanalyst makes you a receiver of Lashon Hara, because most patients just talk Lashon Hara about the whole world, you know? So, is that Lashon Hara or not? So, of course, the answer is no, it's not Lashon Hara, because they are doing it in order to cure themselves. Meaning, if we believe that the psychoanalysis helps, right, then it's for a positive reason. So that depends. Meaning, if you are talking to a friend in order to clarify in your own mind, right, what the situation is with you, right, sometimes you need it. So if you do it for that purpose, it's permitted. You understand? Do you remember the Chofetz Chaim says that intent is crucial in the whole situation.
So
intent.
But if you explain it just so he can understand, he can understand it.
You know, he helps you understand. He helps you understand yourself, and that's good for you.
No, but if you're doing it, you're telling them to help them understand you, not you understand yourself, because you know it already. Why are you telling them?
We were talking, of course, I mean, if he doesn't have to know, of course, that would be Lashon Hara. But we are talking in a case that you need your friend to talk it over with, in order to, for you yourself to clarify your own.
But normally you do it to help him understand you so he won't be mad at you or something like that.
Maybe that's also fine. That would also be a positive reason. That would also be a positive reason, right? As long as the intent is right, it's a rule of thumb. Of course, there are many exceptions. If the intent is positive, right, it's a rule of thumb, which means there are many exceptions, but it's a rule of thumb that it's permitted.
Wait a minute. I have a question then. Would, theoretically speaking, hypothetically speaking, would a psychiatrist be allowed to encourage a child to, let us say, speak Lashon Hara about his parents?
You mean while he's getting treatment?
Yeah, I mean, a child is disturbed or whatever.
Somebody, I can't remember which rabbi it was that was asked this question. And the rabbi said, definitely yes.
He would be allowed.
I mean, this is always a rabbi who believed in the method. I mean, if you believe in the method, then of course you should encourage him because that will make, the effect would be positive. Remember the principle. If you do it for the sake of something positive,
a very difficult decision to make, then the advice of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky is don't annoy your parents.
Immediately? Or, like, because I would think that, Grant, when I first came home and they were, maybe my mother was a little upset with me returning to Israel, maybe I'd make a choice, but then she would have gotten over it in 3 months. I mean, what point do you mean?
You know, so, again, you have to think, what's called annoying your parents? Right? It's annoying your parents if they say, oh boy, I wish you wouldn't be. Of course, again, it's a matter of weighing, right? Is that called an annoyance? Right? So of course you weigh, you say, listen, if my gain is so much, of course, how do you evaluate it? But if my gain is so much, and their annoyance is so little, so of course my gain is more important than their annoyance. It would be a very, very difficult decision to make, but we do it all the time. We evaluate things, we give weight to certain things. So you have to realize, right, it's something that'll get over, it's not something very deep, right? What about if their annoyance is deep and they become bitter and unhappy? Of course, then it's more important. So, all the Torah can give is guidelines. Right? The application of the guidelines to the specific case, right, will require an evaluation of how annoyed are they, right? How much will I gain? How much will I lose? But the guidelines are clear. The applications sometimes are difficult, but the guidelines are clear. Okay?